Welcome into the College Basketball Answer. Happy to have you alongside. My name is Nicholas Hodel, coming to you from New Palestine, Indiana, as we get into the winter break for a particular college, Arizona State University. Nick Keeley alongside me near San Francisco. And I know you were talking earlier, you just got home. Must be feeling good to be back home with the winter break.
Oh, yeah. Great to just get home, see a bunch of friends, and most importantly, just have enough time to sit down on a Saturday and watch some good old hoops.
That was probably the biggest thing for me, too. And trust me, that was pretty hard today with the family wanting me to go every which way. But it was a great day. One of the best Saturdays we've had all year. And it was separation Saturday in a lot of different cases, but not really for North Carolina. They're trying to get back within the nationally elite. And what a big day they had in overtime against Ohio State in the Garden, 89-84. Quite the fun game. A lot of great shot making in the final few minutes of regulation. North Carolina gets it done in overtime. But really, the three big players on this North Carolina team, Caleb Love, RJ Davis, and Armando Bacot, they all really showed out. And I think that was one of the big things here for me, Nick, is all three of those players had big days.
I mean, it's probably been one of the best trio performances we've seen thus far into the season. At least 20 points from each, highlighted by 28 and 15 from Bacot. I mean, just absolute dominance from those three. RJ Davis and Caleb Love both provided what they need to if this team wants to get rolling on the wheels like it was at the beginning of the season. And this was just a really impressive performance for a team that's really been kind of slowing down. And losing a lot of momentum, as we've seen with some bad losses. But it was a really, really optimistic look for the Tar Heels.
Yeah, it's the Tar Heel team that had lost four straight, but a reminder of those four games, Iowa State, Alabama, Indiana, Virginia Tech. They're definitely not losing to the worst competition ever, but to that point, to really going into the Saturday, their best win was at home against James Madison. They needed a better win than that, and they got it in a big-time way against Ohio State, a team who likely will, once again, fall out of the top 25 with the loss, but certainly not to blame some of these players. I mean, Bryce Sensible had 22. Justice Suming had 16. Bruce Thornton had 17. Some really good performances individually from Ohio State. They just couldn't get it done in overtime. And Ohio State, they definitely haven't had the worst of losses either. I mean, they've lost to Duke, San Diego State, and now North Carolina. So North Carolina, they're still in a pretty solid spot. But for North Carolina, Nick, you look at this win, and you look really at the next several weeks. You have Michigan to wrap up the non-conference slate, then Pittsburgh, Wake Forest, and Notre Dame, four teams that they're not nationally elite, any of them. They're certainly good teams. What does a win against Ohio State do for that Carolina team going into that stretch?
I think what it does, it reminds the locker room that, hey, this is a solid team right here. Do I think that this proves that, hey, North Carolina is still a great team? I don't know if you can still put them in that great territory. But in terms of being a solid squad, yeah, this really cements that. This reminds them of what they've been able to accomplish. And hopefully it'll be able to give them some momentum and push them into these games where they really need to be running on all cylinders. This needs to light that spark, that reminder of what they were.
Yeah, it's almost like they really needed those games at home against Georgia Tech and the Citadel to really remind them of what a good unit they are together. And if they can really put together what they're able to against some smaller oppositions and really put that together against a good team, they can win ball games. I mean, even early in the year, I mean, they weren't winning games convincingly against teams they should have, but getting those big wins against Georgia Tech and the Citadel by solid margins, I think really reminded them of what they can be as a unit. And, you know, it might be better for North Carolina because they like being good at with the target off their back. They like being the hunters necessarily, not necessarily the hunted. And certainly an opportunity for North Carolina to exist. You know, if they go into that January 10th battle at Virginia and they carry through, they get wins the next few weeks, they enter that game 12-4, should they win all of those games against Michigan, Pittsburgh, Wake Forest, Notre Dame, they could find themselves once again with a number next to its name going into that massive showdown at Virginia. So Big time performance there for North Carolina. Really needed to get back into the win column and certainly did that with a major statement. And then following game in Madison Square Garden, part of the CBS Sports Classic. This is a big one for UCLA, getting the job done against Kentucky 63-53, thanks to a great performance from Jaime Hawkins, who had 19 and 12 along with 4 assists. Jalen Clark and Tiger Campbell, I should say, each with 15 points. This is a UCLA team, Nick, that really needed a quality win badly after they blew a couple of opportunities in Las Vegas in November. And what a brilliant week for them. At Maryland, dominates. And then getting that neutral site win against Kentucky. I cannot think of a team that's had a better week anywhere in the country than the Bruins of UCLA.
I have to wholeheartedly agree. I mean, I was a little bit almost disappointed about before this week about UCLA's performance, because I was looking at the squad and I thought it was going to be a top five team in the country the whole year. And that's not what they were showing. But this week, they really cemented that they are. I mean, just a great performance looking at this game, especially from Jaime Hawkins. And Tiger Campbell, you know, he's one of the prolific scorers that can get it at any game. That's what I always talk about. You have to have those scores, and he's a premier example of that. And he was able to go out and do that this game. I mean, knock down 7 buckets. Not a lot of playmaking necessarily. I mean, he could create a shot for himself, but that's really what you need from him. And he's able to provide that. And I think if he can keep providing that, and they can get better playing from their freshmen, it'll keep going better for them. But just a great, great, solid win over a Kentucky team that's kind of descending a little bit here.
Yeah, what's happening with Kentucky is interesting, but you're absolutely right on UCLA. I mean, you look at what they've been able to accomplish to really this point in the year with just one more non-conference game left for the Bruins. You're looking at a team with now 2 great wins on the resume. You're looking at a team that is really in a great spot to be special. And that's really what they have done. And I would imagine that UCLA bare minimum will be in the top 10 come Monday, maybe even higher. We'll have to see. I'll talk more my thoughts are on rankings later on in the program. But I mean, you really, it's really hard to find 2 better wins within a week anywhere in the country, I feel like. I mean, just blowing Maryland out of the water. For UCLA, that's a future Big Ten rival they got going for themselves there. And then the neutral site win against Kentucky. And Kentucky always travels that fan base. So, you know, that's always a tough matchup. So really good stuff there from UCLA. As for Kentucky, it's interesting for them right now. The 3 major quality opportunities they've had, they've lost. And their best win right now is Michigan on a neutral floor. And so you kind of have a 3-game stretch that is pretty simple. Florida A&M, Missouri on the road might be a little tougher, but Missouri has not been able to prove it against a quality opponent. And then Louisville at home. LSU at home to start off 2023 on the 3rd, and then at Alabama. This is certainly a team that I still think can be solid, but they're just not able to go up there toe-to-toe with the big boys of the sport right now. And I know you were saying that perhaps Kentucky's descending. I just view it as they're not elite. And I think we pretty much know that now. You know, they're still a good basketball team, but when it comes time for them to play against an elite opponent, at this point, they've faltered. And I think that's really concerning entering SEC play when you have quite a few elite teams in the country, Nick.
Yeah, and this, you mentioned their missed opportunities in their big game so far. I think that they've just proved so far that unless they can turn it around, unless they can find some other, like, scores to kind of spark it up for their team, I don't think this team really goes anywhere in March. And it's not looking good. I guess they can prove themselves a little bit more with their upcoming schedule once they get to conference play. But it's just the potential, the roof, the ceiling for this team is not very high at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it might be below Oscar Tshiebwe's head, if we're being honest with ourselves there. I mean, and he only had a 4-of-12 night from the field. That's not usual for him. Just 8 points to go along with his typical rebounding performance, 16 rebounds. But Oscar Tshiebwe's rebounding will not be the only thing that gets Kentucky to being elite. And that's just kind of the way it is right now. I mean, not a lot of good performances from Kentucky in this game. And Chris Livingston off the bench, probably the best performance of the game with 14 points for Kentucky, leading scorer of the night. That's not really good, and that's really not something that Kentucky needs to have going forward. They have quite a lot to fix if they want to go toe-to-toe with the big boys. To move on to really with the major matchup, Houston and Virginia, a major statement from Houston, 69-61. This is an impressive bounce back performance after last Saturday's loss at home to Alabama, which Houston really blew an opportunity to remain undefeated after that game. They go on the road, play a really tough Virginia defense, and they win that game. And it was really quite convincing, to be honest. Not a lot of points, but I thought Houston was going to cough that one up on the road. A lot of poise. That's what that really showed me. And it was important for a team like Houston to show that poise. You get into the American Athletic Conference, you're not going to have a lot of opportunities to really show that. I mean, there's some good environment in the American, but the teams aren't quite there. And you consider that the biggest road matchup for Houston in the American is the very final game of the regular season. They needed to show now that they can really go on the road in a tough environment and play up to an elite level. And they certainly did that. A huge win for Houston here.
I mean, yeah, you look at the way that they were able to kind of make adjustments throughout the game. Early on, it looked like Virginia had the edge, but once it got to about halftime, Houston was really able to take over and cement this win here. And it was just a solid offensive performance throughout the entire starting five. Everyone was getting their own buckets. It was facilitation going on throughout everybody. Everyone was getting each other looks. Everyone was getting looks for themselves. And it was just a really, really aspiring win for them. After their tough loss, you needed that win against now a higher-ranked opponent in Virginia where all of your scores are doing their thing. This game was exactly what they needed. It wasn't a blowout win, but it was exactly the convincing win that they needed.
It certainly was. And I wouldn't really be concerned for Virginia at this point. Houston's a phenomenal team in this sport. When you really look at the starting rotations head to head, Houston just won that battle with the starting rotations. I mean, Jairus Walker, the freshman, you know, of all the experience that Houston has, of course, it's the star freshman who becomes the main man with 17 points, 7 boards, 4 assists. He was brilliant for Houston, and he really was the difference. I mean, when you consider some of the other players, Khalil Clark only had 9, 2 of 8 performance. Reese Beekman only had 4. So he was assisting the ball quite well, as was Clark. He also had 8 assists in that game. But just a terrific performance from Houston. That starting rotation, every one of them was doing their job well. And that's what you need in an elite game. You need all of your starters to be able to put up a really good performance. And especially in a Houston team that really only goes 8 deep, 7 deep. They don't have a very deep bench. So you need all your starters to really contribute. And that's exactly what they did in a terrific effort. Now I move on to Indiana and Kansas. Really, this is the second consecutive high-profile matchup that you come away with a lot of concerns for Indiana. It was a wipeout. Kansas by 22, and it was not close early. Indiana had him within 10. He thought maybe the door was open a little bit, but Kansas shut it so fast, and that was the end of it. For Kansas, you have the big freshman, Grady Dick, with 20 points. He was absolutely terrific. 4 of 5 from 3 for him as well. He was terrific. But really, you look at Indiana, just a second straight big game in which they fall completely flat.
Yeah, I have to agree here. I mean, just some disappointing performances here. And it's not to say that Kansas isn't a great team, because they have proved throughout this season that they have scores. I mean, Grady Dick is living up to all of that freshman hype. Jalen Wilson is living up to all that perhaps player of the year hype. But you look at the games, Indiana also had to run into a tough, tough Arizona Wildcats team. And it definitely leaves some question marks. I mean, 2 bad losses in a row for them. And Trace Jackson Davis, just I feel like that could be a problem here. He is a great player, but against this Kansas defense, he really did not do enough. I mean, he only took 8 shots. And in a ranked game, on the national level where everyone's watching you, that's really something that an occasion that you have to rise to, and he really fell short. And that's a little something similar we saw in the game against Arizona, in Las Vegas, where he only took 10 shots, made four of them, but eventually got five fouls. I mean, he just isn't, he's not stepping up in the way that he was earlier on in the season, which got a lot of eyes, which got a lot of people to love him. He's been kind of falling a bit short of those expectations. I feel like that's a lot of Indiana's downfall.
Yeah, and it's not like Kansas is a huge team. I mean, they're just not. And I mean, probably the big thing for Indiana through these last two games, they're getting outscored in the paint 92-46. With a player like Trayce Jackson-Davis, not only is that inexcusable, that's downright malpractice. I mean, you can't do that, period. I mean, and it's not like your guards are helping you with good three-point shooting. Hood-Shalifa was 2-5 on Saturday. Miller Kopp was 2-6. Tamar Bates was 1-5. And then you go back to the previous Saturday against Arizona, you're looking at some better performances. I have to really get on that board there. Miller Kopp 4-8. Race Thompson 4-7-3 in that game. Such input, you just can't be a guard heavy approach. You have a player like Jackson Davis. You need to let him do his thing inside. You just have to. And it's very concerning to not see that happen. And we have to address the elephant in the room. Xavier Johnson, just a horrific injury with his foot. Didn't look very good. And you're looking at a bunch of sophomores and freshmen who would have to really step up if Johnson is out long term. You know, should Johnson be out long term? I hate to assume that he's going to be out for a long time, but you know, you get into that what if game here, Nick. You delete Xavier Johnson from this team, you put in a player like a Trey Galloway or a Tamar Bates. I mean, what does that Indiana team look like to you without Johnson?
It is not a second weekend in March team to me without Xavier Johnson. I mean, of course, Trayce Jackson-Davis is a dominant big in his own right, but it's really the backcourt that unlocks his abilities. And without Xavier Johnson, this team doesn't go far.
Yeah, you need the senior experience at the point for sure. And that'll be something that it's fairly hard to replicate. And, you know, going back, I mean, from Saturday, 49 days until Indiana gets their first meeting against Zach Edey. And with the approach that they've had in these last two high marquee games, I'm going to tell you this. That's going to be a long afternoon. I mean, Zach Edey, he's going to embarrass his rival. I mean, there's just no point about that. They have to let Jackson Davis do his thing. Otherwise, it's going to be really bad for Indiana. And I really don't think they want embarrassment against their rival. So they just really need to find something fast or they will be in big, big trouble. How about the events in Birmingham on Saturday? Gonzaga hitting the century mark against Alabama. A win by 10 for the Zags, and this was a game the Zags needed in the worst possible way. You look at what they have done. Yes, they beat Kentucky at home, and they got Xavier on neutral floor, but you just really wanted another quality win for Gonzaga to boost up their resume before they go into the West Coast Conference, and the best team they play is St. Mary's, and then it's a steep drop-off to BYU. You look at that. It's a great win, hitting the century mark. I mean, it was a very high-tempo game. You had a feeling someone was going to hit really big numbers, and a lot of players hit big numbers for both these teams. I mean, Drew Timmy in particular with 29-10. He was the guy for Gonzaga, and his leadership and his decision to come back really paid dividends for Gonzaga on this particular day with the national stage on the Zags. Huge win for Gonzaga, quite frankly, here.
Huge, huge, huge. I mean, just you focus on that tempo of the game. They shot 70 shots as a team. And when you're taking that many, you don't expect to hit 40 of them. Just so efficient for them in how many shots they took. And everybody was knocking them down. I mean, you had 29 from Timmy, but you also had 17 from Anton Watson. You had 13 from Nolan Hickman. 11 from Julian Strother, 11 from Ruzier Bolton, and even 12 from Malachi Smith off the bench. This was an absolutely great offensive performance from them. 100 points. You don't see that very often against top opponents like Alabama here. And even Alabama put up 90 points. But just such an efficient performance from Gonzaga. It is like everything you needed to go into this kind of weaker conference play. It is the message to the nation that you needed to send as they're kind of falling down to the national rankings. This is something to bring them back up.
Yeah, this really was that big Saturday for Gonzaga. I mean, a lot of Skeeter would have clearly separated them from the elite in this country in college basketball at the highest level. But he certainly got that job done. And we would be remiss if we didn't mention the performance from Alabama star freshman Brandon Miller, 36 points. Just an unreal night from him. I mean, the one bad mark on his night was his ball distribution, just one assist compared to six turnovers. Not a good night in that particular stack, but everywhere else, he was absolutely terrific. And both of these teams, their inside shooting was amazing. I mean, over 60% for both teams inside the arc. Tremendous performance. And it's really hard to follow an Alabama team when they play as well as they did. But, you know, just too many turnovers, way too many turnovers, 21-9. I mean, that will not get the job done against an elite team anywhere in this country. They have to be better than that, so much better. And that gives a lot of credit to Gonzaga, who had 12 steals on the night, including five from Malachi Smith. Just a great defensive effort from Gonzaga to really cause a lot of havoc for Alabama. So really solid game. Gonzaga, they needed that win really bad. Kind of that final big statement before they kind of fall off to the West Coast Conference slate and have to really rely on teams losing to get their way up the rankings. Final really major game. I think that's all five of them. Yep, that was the five. So those were the five big games. Tennessee, Arizona's the other major game, which not quite done as we're recording this on a Saturday night. So not going to talk too much about that game. But of these five particular games, obviously Houston really separated themselves in the pack. Now, I think clearly back into the top three. Indiana continues to fall, and four people put them out of the AP poll last week. I think the number will climb up. Big win for UCLA. They're trying to separate themselves a little bit. North Carolina trying to get back into the conversation. Gonzaga really doing a good job as well. So, I mean, of course, separation Saturday didn't quite apply in some instances, but certainly a good amount of teams getting some big statements on a big time Saturday. Some other top teams or some good teams I want to talk about. UConn, a big win for them, and I mean big, 68-46 on a night in which they struggled at times. I was at this game at Hinkle Fieldhouse, and Adama Sanogo by far and away was the best player on that basketball court. Butler just had so many problems when he got the ball inside. It was just really hard for them to stop. He's a big dude. I mean, he's 6'9", 245. He's got massive muscles. I mean, his arms are huge. And just the one thing I would say to any Big East team, do not leave Adama Sanogo open. You know what's going to happen. You leave him open inside, someone's going to find him, and then you're done. I mean, that's an easy two all day long. So, I mean, that's just a big thing to me here, too. Rebounding. Oh, my God. Butler couldn't rebound. It's a hard time rebounding. I mean, Sanogo had 14 boards. Some of them were on the offensive end. I mean, it was just a horrific night, and Butler had close to 60% of the possible rebounds on the defensive end. That's awful. I mean, on the offensive end, just 10% of available rebounds on that end for Butler. Four offensive rebounds in total. That will not get the job done ever. And Butler, they had their moments where it looked like they were really trying to pressure UConn. And this was by far not UConn's best game. I mean, you're talking about a performance that was outside of Sanogo, quite shaky on the inside shooting. 18 of 42 as a team. Sanogo alone at 12 of 20. So very shaky outside of Sanogo, particularly inside the paint. I think the one thing that Butler did a good job of all night, for the most part, was making life hard for UConn inside. I think that's about the one thing which they excelled early on in particular, and then UConn just ran away with that game. And there was nothing Butler could do at the end of that game. It is what it is there. It's a great win for UConn. Another win that really showcases, in my mind, they're the best team in the country. and just a terrific all-around performance. Some things you have to work on. It's kind of an ideal game at this point, December in conference game, Nick. You win the game by a large margin, but you realize you have a lot to work on here.
I mean, yeah, just some great lessons, but I mean, just the soul of this was the absolutely dominant performance from Sanogo. And the with this 22 point win here, it's great lessons, but you have to focus on just celebrating that great conference win there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at Butler, like the one thing they can take pride in themselves in is they're the first team that should hold UConn below 70. That's probably the only thing they can have to pat themselves in the back on, which I was talking to one of the managers on that team, my best friend from high school, and he told me, we'll take it. It's something. So certainly something to really get themselves. And also Memphis getting themselves into the win column against Texas A&M 83-79. And for Memphis, if it wasn't that loss at Alabama, they would be shoo-ins into the top 25. But there's a lot of great things about that Memphis performance at Alabama from Tuesday, the 91-88 loss. The one thing that Memphis could do well is shoot the three-point basket. I mean, if they had made a three-point basket a lot earlier than the final seconds of the game, they're beating Alabama. They're beating Alabama. I mean, it was a really solid performance. Kendrick Davis in particular was phenomenal with 30 points, 5 assists. Really, really solid performance from him. He also played a really big role for Memphis against Texas A&M on Saturday with 23 points and 9 assists. His impact just continues to be so profound on this Memphis team. And quite frankly, I'm thinking of ranking them. I mean, they were my 28 going into the week. First team out of the AP poll, I think they'll find the votes to get in the 25. They've done what they can, and I mean, that's about as good of a performance you'll see in a loss in my imagination. I mean, without 3-point shooting gets good, who knows? They're easily jumping 95 on Alabama on the road. I mean, that says something when you're able to have that good of an offensive performance. I mean, that the 88 points, that was the most amount of points they've scored in a game all year. I mean, they did what they had to do against Alabama. They just came up short.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just some really great performances, even with the loss. I mean, they had that great win over Auburn where Kendrick Davis, as he does, he steps up in these big games. He had 27 in that one. They've just been very, very impressive as of recently. I think they've been making a great case to be a top 25 team. They had a semi shaky start to the year, loss to Seton Hall, and then a loss to a great near major school in St. Louis. But they've really doubled down on their team, get their game planning. They've been getting the ball more into Kendrick Davis's hands, and that's meant so much to this Tigers team. And yeah, absolutely a top 25 team in my eyes.
Yeah, they certainly are, and I mean, they will find. I think they will find the votes. In the more disappointing column, Utah. Losing their in-state rival 75-66, and you know the Pac-12 had they were really relying now on Arizona State and Utah to be able to get them back, and USC is disappointed a little bit. Maybe they'll find some good wins in the conference play and get themselves back in that conversation, but this was one that Utah couldn't avoid. I mean, they're still riding off that high of beating Arizona at home to start December and the overtime win at Washington State. Two good home performances against Jacksonville State and UTSA. You're feeling really good about this Utah team at 9-2, and they lose at BYU. It's not pretty for Utah at this point. I mean, that was kind of the one thing they really couldn't do. I mean, we would have liked to have entered Wednesday's game against TCU, a 10-2 ball club riding high, but they can't say that. They are still exceeding expectations by a wide margin. Let's at least be fair here. They're a solid team. I don't think people expected that, but that was a loss they really couldn't afford to take here, Nick.
I mean, there's some definite things that you can take out of this game. Utah definitely wasn't as efficient as they would like to be. They turned the ball over a decent amount, but it's not a terrible, terrible loss to them necessarily, but it's definitely one that you have to take on the chin and recuperate for their conference play. Of course, the Pac-12, it has some great teams, and it has teams like California. So you have to you have to have these games. And I think this will be a good learning experience for Utah, and I think they'll be able to turn around for conference play.
Yeah, and just look, I mean, Oregon and USC were teams that were expected to be in that conversation, but you look at Oregon right now, their best wins against Villanova on a neutral court. We'll see where that win goes. There's a long way Villanova has to go themselves. But if you're going to rely on that as your signature non-conference win, that's not good at this moment. That's not good. It could improve, but at this particular moment, that's not enough. That just isn't enough. They have a good strength of schedule. They play UConn, Houston, UCLA, but just not finding a win, not finding that signature non-conference win, not that great. And USC at 8-3, it certainly could be a whole lot worse for them. But their best non-conference win to this point is BYU, as Nick and I talk on a Saturday night. Not great. Not great. They need to pick up that win against Auburn up. Depending on how soon you listen to the show, it'll probably be over by the time you take a listen to this. But Auburn and Colorado State remains. I mean, if you're not going to beat Auburn, you're not going to find a signature non-conference win. And that's going to hurt big time. So, I mean, Pac-12 is kind of reeling a little bit. They are in a spot where, yeah, you can still have a good amount of significant representation from this conference in the NCAA tournament come March. But you need things to go right now. And that certainly was not one of them in my mind. And I mean, that one's going to bite big time. Let's move on a little bit away from specifically Saturday and more in a deep dive on the Creighton Blue Jays. Now reeling, a six-game losing streak for the Creighton Blue Jays. And since we last talked to you, it's been an interesting week for them. The neutral losses in Vegas last Saturday against BYU. I mean, that was just purely unacceptable. I mean, they tried to come back to that game, and the press in that game from Creighton. BYU is so scared of that press. But Creighton found a way to lose that game. The game against Arizona State, the one I covered this past Monday. Tough loss for Creighton here. I mean, Creighton, they showed a lot in that game without Ryan Kalkbrenner, that they can compete well against a real defensive team and that they can really get through. And I mean, they did show quite a bit. But at the end, it was just Arizona State had just enough. I mean, that 11-1 run in the second half from Arizona State late in the game ended up proving to be the deciding moments. But only just after ASU used its now really patented defense with this team to be able to get that stop on the final possession. It's a real good win for Arizona State, and it raised some interesting points for Creighton there. And then the loss to Marquette on Friday, just not a good performance. And it was just a complete failure from the bench. And I mean a complete failure. I mean, deep into the game, Creighton had no bench points. Sharif Mitchell and Francisco Farabello found some for Creighton, but just purely unacceptable. For that Creighton team. So you look into the grand scheme of things over the last six games, they've lost all of them. The incredibly tight game in Maui against Arizona in the Maui final, the close game against Texas on the road, they quite frankly were impressive to keep that game close. I don't know what Nebraska was at home. That was incredibly disappointing. I mean, the BYU and Arizona State losses in Vegas and at Marquette. What are you seeing from this Creighton team that's led them to go from 6-0 to 6-6?
I just see a lack of will here. I find a lack of figuring out who's your supporting cast. It's been looking different. It's been looking like different schemes almost for different games. They've gone towards similar things. Of course, when Sharman plays, he's their guy, but it's confusing game in and game out. What they want to accomplish on the offensive side of the ball. And then that isn't helped out by, some performances where you let BYU score 83 or you let Arizona State score 73. It's a bad mixture of questions on offense where you're almost directionless and letting up too many points to teams.
I think part of the problem is some of the key guards are having off nights. Ryan Nembhard is a great example of this. You know, you look at his last four games in particular. Against Nebraska, 6 points. Against ASU, 3 points. Against Marquette, 5 points. I mean, you look at me, you talk about that supporting cast. It's almost, you need to find that clear-cut supporting cast around the center position. Not necessarily around Kyle Brenner, because Frederick King, he's actually done a darn good job the last two games. 16-10 against Marquette. 16-11 against Arizona State. Yes, he struggled against BYU in 18 minutes. But as he's gone to that starting role, he has actually played really well. He's played really good basketball. And so I don't think it's necessarily the center position, because Frederick King, as a freshman, is proving himself. It's what's around that center position. And there's great talent there. It's that they can't have off nights. I mean, even Trey Alexander, the 4 points against Marquette, after his last two games were actually pretty solid, even though he still hasn't been shooting the ball quite well, particularly inside the arc. It's very confusing. And I think that just need those better performances, particularly from Trey Alexander and Ryan Nebhard. Banner Shireman, I mean, you talked a little bit about him. He's been consistent. He's been giving him great consistent performances, almost consistent double-doubles, particularly with his defensive rebounding ability. So he's been solid. And you look at a guy like Arthur Kaluma, over the last three games at least, he's also been consistent. Had an off night against Nebraska, probably part of the reason why they lost that game against Nebraska, but 27 against BYU, 15 against Arizona State, 12 against Marquette, decent rebounding numbers in most of those games to go along with it. You just have to have all of your guards on the highest of cylinders. If you can't get that, you're going to keep losing games. And 6-6, I mean, that's nowhere near where we thought Creighton would be. I honestly would not be mad if Creighton was 8-4. If they win the games against Nebraska and BYU, I wouldn't be mad. I mean, Arizona and Texas, you can't fault them for those games. They played really good basketball in those games. Even though against Texas, wasn't playing their best, but they fought darn hard to get back into that game. Darn hard. And a lot of that was Baylor Shireman. Arizona State, we know their defense is capable of. It is a great defense. And they're on the cusp of the top 25. And so many ASU fans have been asking for that. They're on the cusp. Will they get that on Monday? They might be a win against San Diego away from it. And then Marquette is also a really good basketball team with the way they play defense. So 8-4, I don't think we're having these conversations of what is wrong with Creighton, but it's 6-6. It's very interesting at this point. And home games against Butler, DePaul, and St. Hall, you would think would be the bounce back. You would think. Is that coming? I'm sure it is. I think they just have enough. But if Nebhard and Alexander continue to have off nights, who knows what can happen with this team, Nick?
And yeah, who really knows? I'm not very confident in the fact that they can, out of this Butler, DePaul, Seton Hall, I guess, three-game stretch that they have coming up here, I'm not confident that they win all three of these games with the way that they're going. Of course, if they do, it would be a great bounce back to go into their game against UConn. But it's so many questions with this Blue Jays team that you really need all three. And I would be – it would be something to celebrate if they get all three win at the beginning of the season. If you look at winning those three games, it'd be like, oh, okay, that's a solid stretch. You know, it's – The goalposts have really changed for this Creighton team. And it's really something that I didn't expect at all. But if they can get these and have a decent performance against UConn, perhaps the best team in the country, then you can have some more faith in the squad. But as of right now, it's little to no faith.
I think we're going to learn a lot about that team on January 7th at UConn. We're going to learn quite a bit about them and just what they are capable of. I think we want to learn just what this version of Creighton looks like and just how much off nights from the surrounding guards can affect them against elite competition. Haven't quite seen that yet. We're going to find out, and it may not be pretty. It may not be. let's move on to a unique statement as we get into the holidays, and the holiday spirits are nice and naughty list for 2022-23. Now, we're going to spend a short amount of time on this. We'll have an upcoming three-part series with the Power Conference Near Major and Mid-Major list coming for our Bonanza Chronicle series soon, our website, collegebonanza.wordpress.com, and we'll certainly do a lot of thinking about this over the next week. But for right now, we're just going to spend a little bit of time just kind of bouncing between, giving a little sneak peek of what that is going to look like. And let's just get it out of the way. Louisville and California are definitely on that naughty list. I mean, Louisville, they've done a job in getting two wins. I mean, I didn't expect them to shoot the ball out against Western Kentucky. Even Nick's kind of giving them the slow clap. But California, oh my God. What?
Big old goose egg.
It's so surprising. And as I was deeping and in diving into this team further, their interior shooting is awful. I mean, they're bad. I mean, only one player has a 50% clip from inside the two-point arc. One player. That's their center. He's shooting less than 55% from inside the arc. That's awful, Nick. That's bad. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I had to get that out of the way. I have written some deeper dives into those programs. We want to check that out on our website, collegebonanza.wordpress.com. I will give some credit to UConn on my nice list. They have exploded from a team who had so much potential to really get things going with players like Adama Sanogo and a decent supporting cast, to where they are now the best team in the country in my eyes, and number one in KenPom. And that PK Invitational, the wins against Alabama, Oregon, Iowa State, you follow it up, Oklahoma State, Florida, just the way that they've been able to dominate everyone in their path has been utterly impressive. Even when they're not at their best, like they were against Butler, they find a way to win that game at 22. Show me another team that can do that on their not best night. I'm not sure you'll be able to find anyone. I mean, UConn is that good as a team. And Sanogo is just the leading force of it. And, I mean, there's not a lot else I could say that can really just give a lot of nuisance to just how good UConn is, Nick.
100%. Yeah, it's one of the best teams in the country right now. With my first nice team, I'm going to be going with the Arizona Wildcats. I keep talking about them this year. They're such a solid squad. I mean, you just had that win against Indiana, where they completely showed out in Las Vegas. They're doing pretty well against Tennessee right now. Great ranked matchup here. It looks like it's probably going to go into the half about tied. They have a 2-point lead right now. But they've just been so solid this year. Been beating good teams like San Diego State, who's kind of taken a fall off since that game. They had their one bad loss to Utah. But since then, they've been such a solid squad. They're the definition of a nice team.
Yeah, they're another team like UConn who we knew had potential, we knew had good players, but they've really shown it. And I know for me personally, last Sunday, I have moved them into the top five. I honestly don't know why more voters didn't really take notice of Arizona than they would just give a whooping to Indiana. I don't know why more people didn't notice. I certainly did. And to be fair, I didn't quite watch a lot of that game. But I found that I was like, wait, what? And then the fact that they didn't move Indiana, I will say, looking back at it, might have been an overreaction for me to bump them down five from 17 to 22 last Sunday, given how good Arizona is. But, I mean, at this point, I have no choice but to move them out. I mean, we're looking at that conversation right now. And, again, I'm definitely in a minority there, but definitely something really of note. Indiana just can't get done against a good team. Arizona, we've talked about Indiana already, kind of a side point to this. Arizona, they absolutely have done that job, and they've done it marvelously. They have been really impressive, and they're back to being in the spot they were in last season as one of the favorites in the Pac-12 conference. It's them and UCLA. It's kind of what we thought was going to happen, UCLA and Arizona. And they're both now toe-to-toe with each other, and that's great for West Coast basketball. Great for West Coast basketball. For me, back onto the naughty side of things, a lot of teams here. There's a lot of bad teams within this conversation. Let's go Dayton. Let's go Dayton here. I mean, you look at a Dayton team. We expected them to be one of the teams that are going to go toe-to-toe with a team like St. Louis. They got their own problems. But Dayton, I mean, it's been – their losses aren't terrible. At UNLV, losing all three games in Atlanta, I thought was that. I mean, that was the death blow to Dayton. And then just getting obliterated against Virginia Tech. I mean, at this point in the year for a team in the Atlantic 10, there's no point in winning 4-5 when that one loss sets you back. A lot more on those four wins puts you ahead. And they're, I mean, the entire conference is in trouble. But Dayton, they need a lot right now. I mean, their defense can certainly get them there, but there's just so far from their expectations, both them and St. Louis. We might as well group them together here and talk St. Louis while we're at it too. They also have not been able to prove it against great teams. The loss to Maryland, Auburn, Iona, Boise State. Those are four decent losses. But for an Atlantic 10 team and a conference that, as a collective, has been getting worse, you can't afford that. You can't afford that. And I don't think there's a team anymore, unless they go one loss, two loss in the A-10, there's not an at-large team there. There's not. And that's incredibly disappointing for the Atlantic 10 Conference. It looks like it's going to be a 16-tournament streak gone of being a multi-bid league. They have themselves to blame. Dayton, St. Louis, just couldn't get a quality win. Look where you're at. Almost irrelevant nationally. Did not have to be that way for the Atlantic 10, Nick.
I'm going to my naughty list. This one hurts me to say, but I'm going with Michigan State right here. I was so high on them earlier in the year. I was saying that they were a top 20 team, potentially a top 15 team. But since then, they have just been constantly just breaking my heart. I mean, after that loss to Bama, you squeak out again, win against Oregon. You beat Portland by one in the Phil Knight Invitational. But then it's loss to Notre Dame by 18, loss to Northwestern by 7. They've had some decent recovery games against Penn State and Brown, but just an absolute just roller coaster. My hopes were all the way up, and then they absolutely crashed for Michigan State. I mean, I thought they were going to be so good after their game against Gonzaga, the one on the airship carrier, the carrier, their win against Kentucky. I had every ounce of hope for this Michigan State Spartans program. And then they just knocked it all off the table. And that's putting them straight onto my naughty list. Number one on my naughty list.
Oh, wow. That's what I didn't see coming. I didn't see that coming. And, I mean, you look at that stretch at the Philadelphia Invitational. Look, it was coming. I mean, the two-point win at home against Villanova. I mean, we didn't know how far Villanova would drop, but that wasn't good. The loss to Alabama. I mean, what can you say about that? I mean, yeah. Whatever. Spam-a. A 4-point win against Oregon. Didn't really be that close. Oof. Oregon wasn't really showing much. And then just a really close game against Portland. I mean, good Lord. I mean, it's kind of seemed like it was coming. Like you said, I mean, that was just kind of a deep drop on that roller coaster. I'll close this statement with a team that is going to be on my personal nice list. Again, the other top team in the country, you can't really – say UConn without Purdue at this point and the Purdue Boilermakers. You know, so many teams have been in that spot where you knew what they had. And then we talked about this in the Big Ten. So many good teams. Like, we knew they all had. It's just finding out a way to put it together. And for Purdue in particular, it was the guards. Man, that problem has been settled in a big time way. And they've been able to get some really, really good quality wins while they've been at it. I mean, just to briefly describe their win against Davidson on Saturday at the Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Zach 80, of course he was going to do good. 29-16, of course. The man's a walking double-double. But you look at the freshmen of this team, Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer in particular. That was kind of what we think was the weaker spot, the guard, particularly those two freshmen. How are they going to be able to play out? They've been fantastic. Fletcher Lawyer had 14 points, 9 of 10 at the free throw line. Braden Smith, 10 points, 5 of 6 at the free throw line. But you just look at what these two players have been able to put together. But Fletcher Loyer, he's been great. I mean, he's had a couple of 20-plus point performances, and he's been consistent as a real quality scorer. And then Braden Smith, yes, he's had some off nights. He's kind of an up and down a little bit for Braden Smith, but you get him to going well as a second good guard, and you just don't know the potential of this Purdue team. And he's been absolutely terrific in my mind, and definitely worth a place on that nice list. And we'll cut the segment here, but again, we will both be writing this show's official nice and naughty list for the year. We'll be separating that, like I said, into three parts: the Power Conference, the near majors, and the mid majors. So that'll be coming to you on the 22nd for the Power Conference, at the 23rd for the near majors, and the 24th of December for the mid majors. So something to really get you through the holidays, those few days leading up into Christmas, and you'll need that, as we'll describe in our show plans for next week. Let's get to our weekly awards. Got a couple of big segments left. For me, the team of the week is by far UCLA. We talked about them a lot. You're not going to find a better collection of two wins combined within a week outside of Feast Week. I mean, show me. I mean, so impressive. Completely obliterating Maryland, and the win against Kentucky. Absolutely two standout wins, both away from home. That's going to help UCLA as well. A terrific week.
For my team of the week, I also have to go with UCLA. I mean, you mentioned it. It's harder to have a better week, especially in this type of schedule where after that feast week, than the Bruins had. I mean, they had the absolutely dominant win. Their win against Kentucky, where they showed out to, on Saturday, was able to limit Oscar Tshiebwe, and also their win against Maryland, a Maryland team that's been a little up and down, but they've been pretty hot as of recently. UCLA has just been pretty dominant on their way back up.
Yeah, certainly, and I'll have you give a mid-major of the week. Just one of those weeks where, to me, it hasn't really been a true standout mid major this week. They've kind of been playing each other and just finding to get stuff there. But, I mean, not a lot of mid majors to me stood out this week, Nick. But if you had to choose one, who are you going with?
I guess I'd have to go with Sacramento State here. I mean, beat out a solid Fresno State program. I mean, that's really the only one I can come up with here.
Yeah, kind of a tough week for college basketball in general. It's some lighter slates for sure this week. And then the player of the week for me is going to be Jaime Jaquez. He terrific in both games for him. And I think that goes a long way. You have a player in a back-to-back stretch of a Wednesday, Saturday stretch. You get into Pac-12 slate, it's going to be Thursday, Saturday. So kind of a similar stretch compared to what you'll see in the Pac-12. And he delivered in both of them. I mean, just absolutely brilliant from him. As a reminder, against Maryland, 14-7 from him, 6-14 from the field. And then against Kentucky on Saturday, 19-12 with 4 assists. Just a terrific week from him.
For my player of the week, I'm going to be going with Brandon Miller of Alabama. They had that tough loss on Saturday against Gonzaga where they led up 100 points. But in this game, Brandon Miller scored 36 points in 37 minutes of play time. Shot 55% from behind the arc. He was shooting really well. And then also in their Tuesday matchup against Memphis, a great Memphis school who's on the up and up, they got that tough win by 3, where Brandon Miller scored 24 points and also shot 50% and knocked down some clutch free throws and clutch shots when it mattered. I mean, Brandon Miller has just been absolutely on one this week and is my bid for the player of the week.
It is really hard to have two better games consecutively than that. I mean, that's really freaking impressive. And for a freshman.
100%, yeah.
I mean, that is just unbelievable what he's been able to do for this Alabama team. We're going to wrap up the show with some of my thoughts on a Saturday night when it comes to ranking this week's top 25. And you're going to get to see how I do this next. I'm going to show you my screen here on Zoom, and you're going to see the spreadsheet. I don't know if you've seen this quite like this, but here it is. This is the spreadsheet, and for those listening on our podcast platforms, I have a major spreadsheet, my 25, short list of other teams. The rankings go to 36, but I got a few more teams on there, and I just keep track of their weeks, and I do it on paper for organization. It's perfect for me because I'm an organizational freak. I love it. I love being organized. But real what I'm at right now, just based off the results that we have, for me, it's UConn 1, Purdue 2, Houston 3. It's really hard to really get in a spot that's any clearer than that. The Arizona result could change that, but for me, if anything, Arizona would go to 4 because of the quality win that Houston delivered at Virginia. I mean, and for me, it's that simple at this point. And Arizona does win against Tennessee, they'll be number 4. I think that's also very simple. If Tennessee wins that game, they will jump up to number 4. So that's quite the number 4 spot in my mind on the line in that particular game. Moving further down the 25, I mean, tough for Duke just not playing this week. I mean, almost got to figure it out as kind of a green mark. I mean, I was at a black mark. They haven't played this week, but you almost have to figure it out as a green because, I mean, what can they do? Nothing. I mean, that's kind of what they've done for themselves. Man, they'll benefit at least one spot because of Kentucky losing to UCLA, but that's good. That could get counteracted. So the Duke conversation will come when it comes, but I will not heavily penalize them for not playing. I'm not that kind of person. Could they drop a spot or two? Yes. I think that's definitely in the cards. But I don't think it's reasonable for me to drop Duke too much because they didn't play. That's not reasonable. You look further into the teams that are going to drop. Maryland is for sure going to drop. That was embarrassing against UCLA at home. That was embarrassing. I have to drop them. Ohio State, just because they lost. I mean, when you get to that 22, 23, 24, 25 range, you got to keep winning, or else you will get replaced. And that's exactly what's going to end up happening. And then Indiana, they're not going to fall too far out of the 25. They're still a quality team. Their approach right now just isn't right. And like I mentioned earlier in this program, when you get outscored by as much as you are in the paint against two quality opponents with a player like Trace Jackson Davis, something's not working. And I will tell you this, Nick, when it comes to Big Ten play, that will get punished tenfold. You cannot afford to get that outscored in the paint in the Big Ten Conference. Too many good big men in the conference that will punish you in a big-time way. As far as team going up into the 25, we talked about Memphis. I certainly think they will be in that conversation. I had Xavier and Arizona State also within the three next teams on the pecking order, and it is certainly possible that all three of those teams go up into the 25 just based on the pecking order. It is certainly possible that that is the way things are going to fall. Xavier, at my 26, they did exactly what they needed to do. 20-point win against Southern and dropping 102 on Georgetown on the road. I mean, now going at Georgetown's not really much of a test anymore these days because of the crowd size, but clearly, they did their job. Arizona State, the win against Creighton. I mean, I still view Creighton as a solid team, even though they're 6-6. That's just reality, but they're not going to be in my top 36, but they're still a quality basketball team. They are a win against San Diego away from going into my 25, into perhaps others. I think that's certainly relevant to say at this point. So, I mean, that's kind of a lot of my thoughts at this moment. UCLA, for sure, in the top 10. They're going to probably jump a bunch of teams that did their jobs this week, and they'll find their way into that top 10 for sure. Just kind of based on what I've said there, Nick, what are some of your thoughts?
Yeah, I can 100% see Memphis and Xavier taking over those spots at the bottom as Indiana and Indiana, Ohio State fall, depending on how far Maryland falls and how Arizona State plays on Sunday against University of San Diego, will kind of, I guess, define the third team out of that Xavier, Memphis, Arizona State group. But it's near the bottom of that top 25. Things are really shaking around them. Of course, TCU has been hot as of recently. They have a game on Sunday against Mississippi Valley State. And it's tentative towards the bottom, but the top so far, I can't agree more. UConn has been just so good. You really can't make much of an argument against them being number one. But Purdue is up there as well. I think it's a very solid top three as of right now. I have no arguments with that.
Yeah, I certainly think that based on the way the AP poll voters voted last week, this will once again be a disputed number one. between mainly UConn and Purdue. Certainly valid. It's just going to be about where those first place Southern Virginia got last week will go to. And it could bump UConn over the top. I mean, it very well could, and I would not be surprised. I also wouldn't be surprised if Purdue stays number one. They haven't done anything that suggests otherwise. And that's typically the way these voters work. So wouldn't be surprised about a lot of things at the top. Wouldn't be surprised too much about a lot of things at the bottom. Would not be surprised if Indiana found a way to stay in the AP 25. And it's simply because of this. Voters right now have been around 14, 15, 16. That's kind of the peak of that little bell curve. And like I mentioned earlier in this program, only four voters took Indiana out of the 25 after last week. Me at 22, I'm very much on the more critical side of the bell when what you are doing is that my ballot into the poll. Very much on the more critical side of where Indiana is right now. But certainly, two big games that haven't proved themselves, I have to put them out. I really don't think I have much of a choice. I mean, Illinois, they got a win. Miami, I should say, got a win. And I think you have to have a few more other teams that are proving themselves to be a little bit better. So certainly it'll be a fascinating conversation, but certainly where I'm leading at this point, of course, about 24 hours until my top 25 for the week is released over on our Twitter at College Bonanza. And so that'll be a very big thing you're looking out for there. This next week, we are going to not do a show on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. We'll pull it out on the 26th. We're going to do it on the 26th. Of course, enjoy the holiday with your family. Certainly hope it's a good one for you. And to assist in that, we're going to push our show to the 26th. You actually can enjoy Christmas Eve and Christmas Day with your loved ones and your friends. And that is going to wrap things up for our show this week. For Nick Keneally, I am Nicholas Hodel. Wishing you a very good holiday week. We'll catch you on December 26th with another edition of this program. Enjoy, everyone.